All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and I'm back with another video. It's the Grim Articles Show, and I've got Dead Penetration here.
What's up?
And before we get started, let's shout out our sponsors. We'll talk about the first one, SpinningRobotPussy.com. Still selling those. Remember that there's going to be a price increase later on in the year, so if you want it at the current price, you better go get it now. Also, you have the Follow Me Eyes. Dr. Dollhouse did a video with the Follow Me Eyes, another one. So if you want to know how they work, you can check out Dr. Dollhouse and find out more information about the Follow Me Eyes when you put them in a doll and all that kind of thing. Also, we've got the Dragon's Treasure. Now, Dragon's Treasure hasn't really talked to me or anything else. I mean, they've got pretty big, YouTube guys like Nick and a bunch of other people promoting them. So I guess, I'm not their biggest supporter by any means. But yeah, if you like Dragon's Treasure anime-inspired teas, you can get a pack for like $7 a month or something like that. And they're pretty high quality. I haven't had them yet, but people tell me it's pretty good. So you can check them out. I'm not even sure what the 10% off codes are because they change all the time. And the codes I've been using, I don't think are valid. So I don't know. I'm not even sure if we'll keep that sponsor. I'm not getting anything from them. So I don't know what's going on there. But we're definitely going to be continuing to promote SpinningRobotPussy.com. And, of course, I thank Revy Innovations for everything they have done for the channel. And it's just awesome. And, of course, they're also bringing you the Sengoku Rants coverage, which I'll work on as soon as I can get finished with Rant 6, which I've been putting off because first Dark Souls came out, then I got into Ender Lilies, then I got into all this other stuff. But I am going back to Rant 6 at some point. Believe me, I am going to go back through it. I was into it. And as soon as Rant 6 is done, I'll go back into Sengoku Rants. So I can play it a little better. Alright, so now that that's out of the way, I might sound a little different because I had an endoscopy and I'm not exactly sure everything they did. I don't know if I was dilated, I don't know what. All I know is that I have several ulcers in my esophagus. That's not too great. Some in my stomach. And they found a polyp in my stomach, which they removed. By the way, don't freak out about the polyp. Only 1% of all polyps in stomachs are cancerous. And in order for that one polyp they found to be cancerous, it'd have to be like a 1 in 0.9999. Like, yeah, it'd be astronomical for the one polyp. Because there's only a 1% chance that those things are cancerous. So it'd be super ultra rare. Like, I would be literally cursed at that point. But that wasn't the case. It's non-cancerous. And they removed it. I don't think I talked to you guys about this. Because I had the little cyst on my ball sack, I guess you could say. It's not really necessarily on the ball sack. It's like in the... There's like a little thing that connects your balls together. It's like if it was stitching. Basically, that's where it is. It's called the spermatic cord, that's where it is. And sometimes it can be painful and sometimes it doesn't. Oh, by the way, most men have them, and they're usually not painful, but if they can be painful, they can be an issue. Now, what I mean is not cancerous. I mean, they're not cancerous. They're never cancerous, by the way. But they're a pain. Sometimes you got to drain them. Sometimes you got to just cut them out. They do a surgery. It just depends on how of embarrassing it is, or if it swells up, to the size of the testicle. I've not had that happen. It's just stuff that men go through. And since this is a channel for mostly men, we need to talk about men problems like that. And that's something that all men may go... Well, I mean, a lot of men will go through. A lot of men. You may not even know you got one. You may feel that section between your balls, and you're like, oh, that feels weird. That doesn't feel normal. That's what they assist it looks like, or well, that's what it does. It feels like, whatever, you know. I didn't get that much sleep. I had to be up early as fuck to get this endoscopy done. But yeah, so that was what happened to me. So basically, yeah, I've got to do the pantoprazole thing. Apparently, I just got way too much stomach acid. I got to take two of those every day for like 3 months. He wants to see me again in June, and hopefully he says that it's better. Of course, I'm going to take pops out of my diet. I've already said I'm taking out pops. I'm not, no more of those. And just lower it, way lowered on
now,
the oxygen.
I have been drinking those Zevias that don't have the food coloring.
Yeah.
Don't have a lot of the preservatives.
But that's
going to
be
stuff.
Pretty expensive to buy.
It is, but it's something for a treat every once in a while.
Yeah, I guess you could say. I mean, there's still other...
Super One.
I mean, I can still drink some juices, and there's coconut water and things like that. I can
drink.
Yeah,
I like coconut water.
And tea. I drink my tea. You can still drink tea. I just can't drink the stuff with the high acid, like Dr. Pepper and stuff.
Yeah.
And I obviously can't drink for like 3 months. So
be careful
I'll just
with
do
sugar
it.
Intake because sugar's inflammatory.
Yeah, I know. But that's not what they were. That's not what their issue was. I think personally, a lot of the acid came from but the ulcers came from stress. Because of all the anxiety and everything I was going through last year, they can cause my stomach to act irregularly, which causes the acid to build up in my stomach and act the way it did, which caused a lot of the ulcers. So, again, she said there was no erosion in my esophagus. There was no erosion. It was just some ulcers in my... And they found that one polyp. And, again, all that stuff... I didn't have this stuff before, and it has a lot to do with, again, changing my dietary, not dietary, my digestive habits, because I was eating at night when I'm supposed to be digesting food at night,
yep.
So that messes up everything. So again, I don't think it has a lot to do with what I consumed, but more or less when, you know, the changing and when I consumed it, the changing and all that patterns. I try not to eat anything after 12 if I can help it. So, you know, that's what's been working for me. I'm still taking my aloe vera gel, and I'm going to just commit to this pantoprazole, two of them every day until June 8th, and then we'll see what he says. And when he says, hey, okay, it's time to start weaning off. I mean, I'm even going to tell my doctor, hey, can I wean off them now? Because I'm going to be pushing him for it. I'm not going to be on these for the rest of my life. I will find, you know, other ways. If this heals the ulcers and everything else like it's supposed to by basically lowering the stomach acid, then that's fine. And again, I just won't get real in the acidic because, you know, I eat a lot of hot sauce. I never really had too much problems. I drank alcohol, didn't have too much problems. So, yeah, it's just... And, of course, July, I want to drink. So, yeah, doctor, we're just gonna have to face that. I will even tell my doctor, July, I'm drinking. Like, sorry, that's gonna happen. But, and if the ulcers ain't cured in fucking 3 months from all that and the aloe vera, then they're just some pretty goddamn strong ulcers. So, I mean, all ulcers are is what? Little
sores.
Little
in
sores. Yeah.
Stomach or intestines.
Yeah. Well, these are my esophagus. They're little sores. So, yeah, we can fix sores. I know sores heal. The body does heal itself.
I mean, they can be serious.
No, yeah, they said these weren't.
Yeah. My brother, he had one going down his large intestine.
Well, yeah, but he drank a lot, though, right?
I believe so.
Exactly.
But no more than I have, and I don't have them. Oh,
I don't know.
Of course, I don't drink like I used to.
Right.
But
I mean, it takes your body. Your body heals from a lot of that shit if you don't drink. I don't drink like I used to. I have like a
vaping made it worse or something like that. So that might be part of it too.
Who knows? I don't inhale any
vapors.
No, I try not to. Try not to mess around that stuff. I don't deal with that no more. The vaping, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Smoke. I don't like being around smoke.
I'm I used to smoke, and I don't even like the smell of it now.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that takes care of it. But, you know, basically, yeah, I'm just going to commit to this. I'm not going to focus too much on everything else. There's a lot more going on. I'll start exercising again. I have been a little bit, actually. Just a little bit here and there. I've been exercising more because the workload's getting heavier, so I got to. And hopefully things will clear up a little bit with my voice. I mean, I already did Evenickel because somebody requested Evenickel, so I had to do that. And I got to do Being a Dick and Starless tonight, so I'll be wore out. Anyway, let's go ahead and get started with your articles. So, first article. Oh, we have some chats. Oh, shit. Arms Girl was on a game show. Just saw this from Rackets. Oh, okay. I'm a little bit familiar with that person. I know Drexel's talked about him, Nick's talked about him, but I just can't recall off the top of my head. I think they call her Arms Girl for a reason. Let's see. Mal asked who she was. So, Invader, if you could explain in the Grim Show chats, I'll tell you and everybody else. Okay. So here we go. We got the first one. This was on March the 1st from News Rescue. It says 1,200 deaths in 90 days. The Pfizer safety data released under Judge FOIA enforcement, and it's not good. It says over 1,200 deaths were reported in the first 90 days. The report was wrestled out by FOIA and has been avoided by mainstream. Pfizer labeled the data as proprietary and confidential, which is weird for safety data on EUA product, which should really be readily public. There's an overwhelming tilt towards women reporting adverse effects, often on the order of four times or more. It says a judge ordered its release, and perhaps not surprisingly, no major news outlet has dared to cover the story. Within that first 90-day window, over 1,200 deaths were reported, with a significant number appearing to happen within the first 24 hours after vaccination. We can't say for sure because the report lacks critical details that would allow us to align the specific deaths with the reported observation that the median elapsed time between vaccination and the adverse event was lower than 24 hours for many types of AEs. The report is a second go by Pfizer after the first report was deemed wholly insufficient and lacking detail. This one isn't actually all that much better, as it is entirely passive. Yeah, I've read it myself. No active data collection undertaken. It relies entirely on spontaneously reported events. Yeah, they call it general events, and they're the highest up there. And no inquiry into the adverse events is part of this version of the report. There's no attempt made to define the incidence of events, and there is no visible effort made to compare the levels of events to an expected baseline of such events. It is also impossible to determine first versus second vaccination injections, not reported, and the age brackets are not even age brackets, child, adult, and elderly. Besides the 1,223 spontaneously reported deaths, there is an overwhelming tilt towards women reporting AEs, often on the order of four times or more. None of these were deemed to be worthy of modifying either the administration of the vaccines or the collection of new data in more useful detail. Further, I tracked down the actual state of knowledge of what is and is not known about pregnancy and the vaccines to uncover the fact that no providers can say one way or the other if the vaccines are safe. In the most current language available to vaccinators and healthcare providers, Pfizer says available data on Comirnaty administered to pregnant women are insufficient to inform vaccine-associated risks in pregnancy. Naturally, without being able to articulate the actual risk, true informed consent is not possible for pregnant women seeking to understand what the risk might be to their unborn child. All that can truthfully said is, we don't know. If more robust data does exist, it has not yet been made public. We may have to wait up to 55 years for that. Huh. Yep. Okay. Now we got some we got some interesting news here. Don't worry. We're getting into the crazy conspiracy stuff pretty soon. But we got some unfortunate, maybe this, like, oh, why are you reporting this? Maybe because my music's on there? Epic Games acquires Oakland-based Bandcamp, and music fans are quite worried. In the music streaming wars, Bandcamp occupies a Switzerland-like middle ground. By the way, most of the music I've bought in my life, I've bought from Bandcamp. The Oakland-based company, which also operated a physical record shop and performance space on Broadway pre-pandemic, has one of the few artist-friendly distribution models in the industry. Although you can stream tracks for free, the site tries to steer the listener towards purchasing music either digitally or as physical media, with an average of 82% of the net revenue going directly to artists. I've seen that revenue myself. So the music industry internet let out a collective gasp when it was announced Wednesday morning that Epic Games, the company behind Fortnite, Gears of War, and Unreal, has acquired Bandcamp. The deal was announced by Bandcamp CEO and co-founder Ethan Diamond in a blog post that was short on details, but stressed a shared vision with Epic of building the most open, artist-friendly ecosystem in the world. For now, nothing looks fundamentally different on Bandcamp's site, and if one were to take the company's word for it, the core mission of the company won't change. Bandcamp Friday is a pandemic-era initiative in which one day per month the service waives most of its fees for artists will continue. Its editorial operation, Bandcamp Daily, one of the few bastions of music writing left on the internet, is also safe for now. According to the CEO, the merger will expand its international scope, improve systems like mobile apps and discovery features, and support its vinyl pressing and live streaming operations. When reached for comment, Epic Games would not comment on questions regarding how this might open up video game sync opportunities for artists or ideas of incorporating streaming music players into future games. As expected, music critic Twitter responded with plenty of armchair predictions about where the merger might lead. Those that trace the money noted that the Chinese tech conglomerate Tencent, which owns 40% of Epic, also has nearly a 10% stake in Spotify. Others noted that Epic might help solve the problem of not being able to purchase albums on the Bandcamp app, as well as help implement a playlist feature. But adding a standalone streaming player might undercut the album's sales. Eagle-eyed observers noted several writers on Bandcamp's editorial team deactivated their accounts Wednesday, but Bandcamp's editorial director assured that the staff isn't going anywhere. For many fans, Bandcamp's independence and modest size were part of the appeal, and this puts it in danger of entering the realm of its too-big-to-be-accountable peers like Spotify. There's also a risk of Bandcamp succumbing to some of the pitfalls faced by SoundCloud, including ads, sample detection, and premium subscription models. And there's also the risk that every musician on the platform might become a playable character in Fortnite. Plus, plenty of commenters predicted that Bandcamp entering into the world of NFTs. Hold on, sorry, let me reread that. Plus, plenty of commenters predicted Bandcamp entering into the world of NFTs, a move that would actually be well aligned with the mission of rewarding creators. It's natural to be skeptical of any acquisition like this, but for all the Twitter doomsaying, the details of the announcement are so thin that the future of the company is really anyone's guess. The one thing that is for certain, this Friday would be a very good day to head to the site to support your favorite band. Well, see, that sucks. Because I just don't trust them. Yeah. China would have way too much of our music. Okay, now we've got some articles from a place I haven't been to in a while, but needed to go. I actually shared this one with Drexel of the MGTOWN podcast, and he was pretty shocked. This picture of Cruz Beckham sums up everything that is wrong in the entertainment industry. A recent picture of a 16-year-old Cruz Beckham was described as sad and desperate by observers. However, when one understands the symbolism in that picture, it goes from sad to deeply disturbing. David Beckham used to be one of the most popular athletes in the world. Victoria Beckham, aka Posh Spice, used to be one of the most popular performers in the world. When these two became a couple, they immediately ascended to the status of celebrity royalty couple in the UK and across the world. After a failed attempt at becoming a soccer player like his daddy, Cruz Beckham, who just turned 17, is launching a singing career. And before anyone even heard him sing a single note, his parents already put their industry connections to work. However, in this day and age, entering the industry is not only about talent, looks, or connections. is not only about talent, looks, or connections, it is about complete and utter submission to a sick agenda. For some, it is also about humiliation and bending to the will of high-placed child abusers who are looking to normalize their sickness through popular culture. In one single picture, Cruz Beckham accomplished all of this. His mommy was so proud, she posted it on Instagram. It says, finger cross... finger covering the left eye. Standard. The Brittany, Justin, everyone pink hair to show they have been initiated. Lastly, 17 and an underwear on a mag cover. If this was a girl, we would be appalled. Literally pimping out your kids. And she says, this is where ignorance or hypocrisy or stupidity is highlighted. Teenage models, especially females, have been modeling and posing in bikinis for decades. Do you watch a Victoria's Secret fashion show? Do you watch female ice skaters, ballerinas, or gymnasts? Do you ever look at Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition? Seriously, though, this is just pure faux outrage. In the screenshot, we can see one of the most liked comments. A growing number of vigilant citizens can now decode this elite madness. This picture of a teenage boy who was 16 at the time with his pants down was not well received at all. Ulrika Johnson calls underage Cruz Beckham's provocative picture sad and desperate. Celebs Go Dating star Ulrika Johnson said the Teens Magazine photoshoot was blatantly sexualizing the son of David and Victoria Beckham. An example of many articles about people not liking this picture. Well, yeah, those are captions for the photos. When this picture came out, my inbox was flooded with people telling me that it was a prime candidate for Symbolic Pics of the Month series, which he does on the website. Of course they're right. This picture is basically SPOTM 101, which is Symbolic Pics of the Month 101. However, there is so much going on in this pic and the entire photo shoot that I had to dedicate an entire article to it. Not because Cruz really matters, but because it's a perfect template that sums up the sacrifices required to enter the industry. So here's a complete breakdown of this picture. To fully understand the minding behind it, we must first look at the person behind it. Stephen Klein is one of the elite's favorite fashion photographers. His works were featured on this site countless times because they consistently contain all the symbolism and the obsessions that get called elite. For instance, Klein directed Lady Gaga's video Alejandro, which I analyzed over 12 years ago. Lady Gaga does a one-eyed sign while wearing a Luciferian robe adorned with an inverted cross in Alejandro. Alejandro prominently featured some of the main themes in Klein's works. Homoeroticism, Satanism, and a whole lot of one-eyed signs, which basically means submission to the elite. Like many other industry insiders, Klein's Instagram account is filled with bizarre posts which appear to be hinting at some of the sick pastimes of the occult elite. And Klein also shares the elite's obsession with pigs, especially pig heads. And he got Madonna wearing a pig mask with a guy holding a fake baby. What does this mean? They're pedos and cannibals. Among countless pics of pure degeneration on Klein's Instagram account, there are also several pics of Klein's son. The mix of these pics is bizarre and off-putting. In this pic, the combination of the one-eye sign with a sad look on the child's face is rather disturbing. Throughout the years, Klein worked with the biggest stars in the world, and his photo shoots never fail to contain a symbolism that is too obvious to ignore. His infamous photo shoot with Justin Bieber has lots in common with the Cruz Beckham photos. In the photo shoot for Interview Magazine, Bieber is depicted as a masked boy toy ripe for abuse in elite circles. In other pics of the same photo shoot, Bieber looks like he just cried. Of course, the one-eye sign is very present, hinting to the fact that he's a victim of the systematic abuse of the industry. When one understands the mindset behind Klein's works and the occult elite in general, the meaning behind Cruz Beckham's photo shoot becomes clearer and more disturbing. The Beckhams clearly want to see Cruz follow in the footsteps of Justin Bieber, who is apparently his idol. To do so, they've hired Pooh Bear, one of Bieber's songwriters. A marketing machine is now in motion, and that included a photo shoot by Stephen Klein for ID Magazine. But there was more to this photo shoot than mere publicity. It was about his initiation into an industry bent on child abuse, exploitation, and submission. As said above, the picture is SPOTM 101. Symbolic picture of the month. First, at the time of the... First, at the time of taking this picture, Cruz was 16 years old, and Stephen Klein, who is known for homoerotic pictures and videos, found it appropriate to have Cruz posing with his pants literally pulled down. This is not so subtle allusion to the sexual exploitation of minors in the industry. Then there's the butterfly tattoo. Many noted that it was illegal for minors to get tattoos in the UK. That is true, but there is more to it. In the entertainment industry, butterflies, especially the monarch, are references to monarch programming, an offshoot of MKUltra. As explained in my article about it, monarch mind control turns people into mental slaves using a process of intense trauma, which includes sexual abuse and dissociation, which enables programming. With that context in mind, the words out of body at the bottom of the picture become a creepy reference to dissociation. Indeed, under intense trauma, the minds of MK slaves dissociate from the body that is suffering as a defense mechanism. Then there's the pink hair. The choice of color is not random. It is perfectly in line with the elite's agenda of feminizing men, especially those in the music industry. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Cruz wears a dress in the near future. Furthermore, celebrities who recently underwent MK programming often emerge with shaved heads and colored hair. Isn't that interesting that the feminists and stuff have the same... Of course, this entire mess of a picture is crowned with a massive one-eye sign, which clearly indicates that this is all about the occult elite's agenda and nothing else. In this pic, Cruz is holding his junk while showing off his abs. In short, this photo shoot blatantly sexualizes a minor. I don't normally dedicate an entire article to a single picture, but this one deserved an in-depth explanation. Cruz Beckham is an heir of celebrity royalty, the son of King David and Queen Victoria. These two monarchs have ascended to the top of the celebrity ladder decades ago, and they've remained at the top with constant media exposure. Now Cruz is the next generation of the Beckham lineage, and like many other children of celebrities, he's being pushed into the spotlight. However, that spotlight comes at a cost. There needs to be initiation, and it needs to be a sacrifice. Indeed, that fabled spotlight is controlled by all kinds of creeps and abusers. Those who are looking to bask in that spotlight must first bend to the will of the elite. I guess Cruz will give a new meaning to the words, bend it like Beckham. So there we are.
Creepy.
Creepy. Creepy. And we're not done. We've got another. This one's not so creepy. But this one's still... Maybe it's creepy if you haven't watched Demolition Man. Oh. Yeah. Another one. I love this one. He just wrote this. And I'm like, oh, well. You were thinking... Like, me and this guy sometimes on the same page. Demolition Man. You gotta watch it. And he's like, let me write an article about it. He wrote this on February the 9th. How the 1993 movie Demolition Man perfectly predicted and ridiculed today's society. The movie Demolition Man takes place in 2032, in an oppressive society managed by a tyrannical doctor who rose to power after an epidemic and social unrest. Watching this movie today is an eerie experience as the jokes of the past are the realities of today. Here's a look at the incredible predictions made by this movie 30 years ago. Okay, and for all you... people here who have not watched Demolition Man, go watch Demolition Man. You will be like, I saw that coming, I saw that coming. And here's the clown music to decorate this fun house. When I want to relax and take my mind off things, I like to watch movies from the 20th century, especially the 90s. Ah. As someone who grew up in this magical decade, man, I bet this guy's about the same age I am, immersing myself in 90s nostalgia is like a balm to my soul. I mean, everything about the 90s was better. Fun things were fun. Cool things were cool. And in my opinion, society was just saner and happier. I agree. Drexel agrees. Nick agrees. I think a lot of you guys agree. The 90s were just fucking better. I'm sorry, they were. So when I recently came across the 93 movie Demolition Man, I could not resist. Is there anything more 90s than Wesley Snipes fighting Sylvester Stallone while wearing denim overalls? But watching this movie in 2022 ended up being a bizarre, mind-bending experience. First, the movie takes place in 2032, which is only 10 years from now. In other words, we are currently much closer to the future of the movie than the year it was actually made. Second, The future depicted in the movie pinpoints with near prophetic accuracy everything wrong in society right now, and it is ridiculing it, as if it is laughing at us from the past. In Demolition Man, a tyrannical doctor oversees a tightly controlled utopia where every aspect of life is monitored and heavily regulated. Sylvester Stallone's character, who was cryogenically frozen since 97, barges into that future and hates every single part of it. So I'm sitting there trying to relive the 90s by watching a movie, realizing that the movie is about a dude in 2032 who wants to go back to the 90s. It's all rather mind-bending. While I like to idealize the 90s, a lot of today's tendencies originated from that decade. At the time of the movie's release, political correctness was burgeoning in the media. Technology was leaping into the information age, AIDS was a worrying epidemic, and Los Angeles was a site of social unrest. Through comedy and satire, Demolition Man depicted a future where a tyrannical figure exploits these elements to an absurd degree to usher in a brave new world. And we're living in it now, and in some ways our future is worse than what we see in the movie. Demolition Man is the only movie directed by Marco Brambilla, an artist who is mostly known for his elaborate art installations. As explained in my article about Kanye West's video Power, who is directed by Brambilla, his works are rife with symbolism. One of his latest art installations has an overload of symbolism. Oh, wow. Look at this. Cool. I'm going to see if I can... I might be able to download that. I can. I'll put that in the chat for you guys. Give me a second. I'll put that in the chat for you guys so you can check out that piece. It is out there. Yeah, the 90s were great. You missed out on a really good time. Okay, look at that. All the symbolism and crazy shit in that. You can see it. But this is the guy that directed Demolition Man. That's his latest, as of 2021, that's his latest art piece. Anyway, getting back to the article here, it says, now of course I have to load it back up again, but that's not hard. Okay, the artwork above is described as a deconstruction of Hollywood, for those of you looking at the picture right now. About 30 years ago, Brambilla was actually directing a Hollywood movie. And after being dismissed as a mediocre action flick, Demolition Man went on to become a visionary cautionary tale against the dystopian tendencies of the elite. Here's a look at Demolition Man and its astounding predictions about today. And Demolition Man, oh, there's a video game of Demolition Man too, by the way. I didn't know if you guys knew that one. It's on Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
In Demolition Man, a violent criminal named Simon Phoenix, played by Wesley Snipes, is sentenced to be cryogenically frozen for 70 years.
For not paying his taxes.
Wow. Is that really why?
That's why he went to jail in real
life. Well, I know that's why he went to jail in real life, but I was wondering if that's why he went to jail in the...
No. He's a killer. Did you not?
Oh, right. Sentenced to be cryogenically frozen for 70 years. In 2032, he is thawed for his parole hearing, but he ends up escaping the facility. Phoenix finds himself in a utopian, non-violent future where guns are banned. They can only be found in museums. At one point, he sums up the situation. The year is 2032, and I'm sorry to say that the world has become a pussy-whipped Brady Bunch version of itself run by a bunch of robed sissies. Everyone in the future wears robes. Other than a nod to globalism, the movie predicted the gender-blurring fashion that is happening now. In a world filled with robed sissies, nobody can stop Phoenix from destroying everything. So the police force decides to thaw John Spartan, played by Stallone, an old-school police dude who was cryogenically frozen in 97 due to accusations of involuntary manslaughter. When Spartan integrates the police force, he's immediately at odds with the oppressive ways of this new society. There are machines everywhere listening to what people say. When someone says something bad, the machine emits a buzzing noise and says, "You are fined one credit for violation of the verbal morality statute." In this scene, Spartan keeps insulting the machine so he can use the fines to wipe his butt with them. What better way of representing today's anti-free speech climate where any violation of the morality code dictated by the elite results in immediate punishment, censorship, and cancellation? Spartan also discovers that everyone has a microchip sewn into their skin, including himself. The chip is required to accomplish anything in San Angeles, including entering one's own home. Since money is outmoded, all transactions are done using the chip. Watching this movie in 2022, it is impossible not to draw parallels with vaccine passports, which are, in many places, required to participate in society. Of course, there are efforts to turn these passports into chips. A recent headline about a Swedish company developed a microchip vaccine passport, or they were working on one. When Spartan learns about the chip, he says, "This fascist crap makes me puke." Yep, back in the 90s, people could recognize fascist crap when they saw it. As Spartan discovers this brave new world, he also learns about how it all came to be, and it's eerily similar to what happened in real life. In 2032, the city of San Angeles, born from the merger of Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, and San Diego, is under control of Dr. Cocteau, a tyrannical figure who uses science and technology to create a perfect society. In Dr. Cocteau's city, everything that is bad for you is illegal. Alcohol, caffeine, contact sports, meat, bad language, chocolate, gasoline, non-educational toys, and anything spicy. Abortion is also illegal, but so is pregnancy, unless you have a license. Also, physical contact between humans is forbidden. With that being said, here's a recent headline from real life. "I don't think we should ever shake hands again," Dr. Fauci says. "Coronavirus should change some behaviors for good."
Fuck Fauci.
I'm not saying that Dr. Fauci is Dr. Cocktail from Demolition Man, but let's say the similarities are stunning. In this contactless society, the best way to run meetings is through Zoom calls, one of the many accurate technological predictions made in Demolition Man. At one point, John Spartan discovers the full extent of the no-touching policy. Spartan's co-worker, Lenita Huxley, named after Aldous Huxley, author of The Brave New World, asks him to have sex. When he agrees, she hands him a Versex device. When one watches this scene in 2022, one automatically thinks those are VR devices. However, none of these things really existed in 93. At that time, the height of technology was the Super Nintendo, which we said the game was on. Spartan hates this device and wants to do it with Huxley the good old-fashioned way. Huxley refuses and explains to him how a series of epidemics and variants led to the banning of the fluid transfer. The rampant exchange of bodily fluids was one of the major reasons for the downfall of society. After AIDS, there was NRS. After NRS, there was UBT. One of the first things Dr. Cocktail did was to outlaw and behaviorally engineer all fluid transfer out of socially acceptable behavior. Not even mouth transfer is condoned. With that being said, here's a recent headline from Canada's top doctor. "Stop kissing. Wear a mask while having sex to prevent coronavirus," Tam says.
Oh my goodness.
This is not satire. Huxley also explains how procreation is regulated in 2032. With that being said, here's a very recent headline. Tech bros propose replacing women with synthetic wombs. Well, yeah. People are actually discussing synthetic wombs right now. Demolition Man also satirizes popular culture being destroyed by political correctness. Indeed, people in 2032 are so sensitive and infantilized that the only music they listen to are mini-tunes, short commercial jingles with absolutely no content. In one scene, Spartan's co-workers sing the Armor Hot Dogs jingle in the car. Oh, they can't even sing that! Fat kids, skinny kids, kids to climb on rocks. Though kids, sissy kids, even kids with chicken pox love hot dogs.
In their mouth.
Yeah. Upon watching this scene, I came to a mind-blowing realization. If the Armor Hot Dog jingle played today on the radio, some people would actually be offended by it. They would request its censorship. In other words, this satirical example of the least offensive song possible would still be considered offensive today. We're beyond satire. While Spartan hates every aspect of this new society, he discovers that some people are rebelling against it. Living underneath San Angeles is a group of dirty rebels who oppose Dr. Cocktail's rule. The unchipped rebels in the movie are complete outcasts from society. They are reminiscent of today's unvaccinated people who are banned from public places because they have no passports. They are also reminiscent of those who are vilified because they want the freedoms that existed in the 20th century. At one point, the leader of the rebels tells Spartan, "See, according to Cocktail's plan, I am the enemy. Because I like to think. Because I like to read. I'm into freedom of speech and freedom of choice." Could this be more relevant today? Of course Cocktail hates these people. He calls them outcasts and deserters who choose to live beneath us in sores and abandoned tunnels. They are a constant irritation to our harmony. We eventually discovered that Cocktail programmed Simon Phoenix to kill the rebels and stop their revolution. In other words, Dr. Cocktail used Phoenix as a mind-controlled patsy to take care of his dirty work. This happens in real life. When Dr. Cocktail exposes the full extent of his plan, Simon Phoenix becomes disgusted and says, look, you can't take away people's rights to be assholes. So even the bad guy in the movie values freedom. Then Jesse Dam Ventura shoots Dr. Cocktail and rids the world of his awfulness. Eventually, John Spartan destroys Simon Phoenix and his gang of thugs. Then in a new world free from Dr. Cocktail's rule, people ask Spartan what they should do next. As usual, Sylvester Stallone imparts the world with precious words of wisdom. He tells the brainwashed citizens to get a little dirtier. Then he tells the rebels to get a lot cleaner. Then he says, somewhere in the middle, I don't know, you'll figure it out. And he's right. Extreme oppression leads to extreme resistance. This is happening now. I say we stop everything and go back to how we were in the 90s and try again. The movie ends with a big fat exchange of fluids. Sanity is back. The movie Demolition Man is probably the most predictive sci-fi movie I've ever seen. It also predicted self-driving electric cars that look exactly like Teslas. Arnold Schwarzenegger becoming a politician. People conversing with Alexa Siri type machines. The widespread use of biometrics and artificial intelligence. The disappearance of small restaurants to be replaced by monopolistic chains. And much more. All of this was pure science fiction in 93. But it could happen if society took a specific direction. And it did. The future depicted in Demolition Man was meant as satire. As basically a warning saying, here's how things could end up if we're not careful. Today, which is 10 years from the movie's future, we can easily say that the satire has become reality. The jokes of the film have become our annoying reality. The COVID pandemic allowed unelected doctors to rule every aspect of our lives and dictate oppressive policies. QR codes and microchips are creeping into our everyday lives. Opinions and attitudes that do not fit the current orthodoxy are immediately censored and punished. General manliness and womanliness are frowned upon and deemed undesirable. While we're being conditioned to think that all this is normal, it is not. Demolition Man is like a distant voice from the past telling us, this fascist crap makes me puke. That was a good one. And it's crazy. It's crazy how all this... We've got more articles, but we're going to end with this one. And we'll... Because we want to do being a dick and get that going. So we're going to go with this article, which has been shared as a little bit of a lighthearted note for all the doom and gloom. Babylon Bee. Putin receives Nobel Prize in medicine for ending the COVID pandemic. Switzerland. After serious deliberations deep inside the super-secret Nobel Prize compound in Switzerland or whatever, the Nobel Committee of Medicine deciders have awarded the coveted Nobel Prize in medicine to Russia's President Vladimir Putin for single-handedly ending the COVID pandemic practically overnight. News of the swift and nearly miraculous end to a years-long pandemic came in a serendipitous moment for members of a certain American political party. While Putin should receive credit for ending this pandemic, President Biden also deserves praise for ending the pandemic and fulfilling yet another campaign promise like all of the other campaign promises he totally keeps fulfilling, said Jen Psaki to a journalist and former future co-worker at MSNBC. Yes, Putin's magical ability to end this pandemic bodes well for any Democrat running for re-election this November, but that's just a happy, happy coincidence. Thanks to the Russian president's decisive blow against the COVID pandemic, Democrat-run states across the U.S. immediately began lifting draconian, life-crushing, and statistically racist mask and vaccine mandates in workplaces, restaurants, and even schools. This great news about the scientifically plausible and immediate end to the pandemic is sure to be one of President Biden's main talking points during his first State of the Union speech. President Putin showed up in person to receive the Nobel Prize and then asked to stay in the super-secret Nobel Prize compound as he was hiding from mobs of angry Russian citizens for no apparent reason.
You know, that was the worst State of the Union address I've ever heard. He contradicted everything he's done, saying he's doing a good job.
It's not to defund the police. It's to fund the police.
It's as if he was thinking he was talking to someone he's never given a speech to before.
Right.
Like, oh, they'll buy this. Like, no, because you've been talking and fucking our country up for this long.
All right. Well, let's see. It says, he said, Mao says, wear a mask to prevent spread during sex. These people are fucking sheep. Yeah, they are. They are. So, I guess that's going to be the end of the show. I thank you guys for hanging out with us and listening to the articles. And, of course, we're going to have more. So, keep them coming. And we'll get to all your articles soon. Don't worry. Just, I got a lot to do and a little time to do it. And I got to hurry up because my... I'm kind of hoarse a little bit. Not super hoarse, yeah. but I'll make it.
I definitely.
At any rate, guys, this is the Grim Lord, and I am out of here. I'll see you guys later. Enjoy the decline.